groups. Often books start, I mean, not this one, but a lot of abstract algebra books start with groups, and the argument there is that groups in some way look easier. What we do is simply we take the axioms of a ring and we throw some things away. So we say, basically what we're saying, in a ring we have two operations, an addition and a multiplication. We forget about the role of the multiplication. Next, we also don't demand anymore that what is the addition would have to be commutative, which it has to be in a ring. Well, that's a little bit, can easily get confusing, so therefore we often will write this one operation which is left actually again as a multiplication, but there's just one operation. So we have fewer things. However, because we demand fewer things, in some way more can happen. We have more diversity in how examples look. In particular, a lot of the example, while with the rings, in some way, at least our basic examples were things you've seen and you've known for a long time. The integers, polynomials, even modulo arithmetic you might have seen somewhere or so. What will happen with groups is that a lot of the things will be new as examples. And that's why I want to do groups later, because in some way I think they are initially, well, not harder, but it's just more uncommon because you haven't necessarily seen the examples. While rings basically came into existence from looking at integers, things like divisibility or so, what happens there, you can say that groups turn out, or one of the main uses for groups is to describe symmetries of objects. So what is a symmetry of an object? Symmetry basically says that something here is the same way as there, in a very, very vague way. And what do you mean is the same? Well, it's not exactly the same, right? It's at least in another place or so. What it typically means is we have certain symmetry operations which map an object to itself and preserve the structure of that object. And such symmetry operations are what will form a group. What will form a group? If we have symmetry operations, we can do them one after the other. That will be the operation. We have an identity operation, namely the symmetry, something which doesn't do anything, and the symmetries we can undo. These are inverses. And that's what groups describe. There is one important thing, and this is new, and this is unfortunately often the source for avoidable errors. The addition in rings, it's like addition in the integers, is commutative. And a lot of the rings where we actually looked at are commutative rings. But if we look at composition of symmetries, this is not commutative. For example, if I look, let's assume this was a square, so rotating really was a symmetry. If I rotate and then reflect, okay, so it looks like this. Text on the back going up here. So I took rotation this way and then reflection here. Okay, if I do the same operations in the other order, I reflect and then rotate, suddenly the text is on this side. So, symmetry operations generically and in many examples are not commutative. So, when we work with groups, and I will mention this again and again, we have to be careful that we cannot assume that we have commutativity laws. And this non-commutative behavior really is almost the essence of what groups are. You might ask, why do we care about these structures? Why do we care about describing symmetries? There are basically two reasons for it. The one reason is to say, if you have symmetries, if you can describe the symmetries of a problem, you can use it to reduce a problem. For example, if I give you some box and I would ask you, where is the center of gravity of this box? Assume it is a brick. Where is the center of gravity? Well, if you look back at calculus 3, what you would have to do is you would have to do a three-dimensional integration in general, and you could find the center of gravity. But of course, that's not, or presumably not, what you're going to do. You're going to say, oh, but this thing is symmetric. If the center of gravity is in the upper half, it also would have to be in the lower half. But there can't be two. There can only be one. So it must be on the line which cuts this in the middle. Similarly, the center of gravity can't be both right and left of this middle line, and can't be both front and back of this middle line. So it must lie in the, exactly in the middle of this box. So what this symmetry argument did is, now we have the center of gravity there without any integration. And that's something which in general holds if you have problems which involve some kind of symmetry, you can often use the symmetry to make your problem easier. Or another example, if you had physics, if you look at the problem of two masses connected by a spring which are moving around in space without gravity, how is the motion there? What you do is first you say you look at the center of gravity of the whole system, and then you look at your second variable, the distance of your masses, which again is basically using the symmetry of this system. And that way you actually can decouple your two equations. So symmetries are useful because you can use them to make problems easier if the problem has a symmetry. However, here we won't really look at a variety of problems from other areas. Basically, what we are going to do is, when looking at groups, is to actually describe symmetries, properties of symmetries, and so on. Okay, so that's roughly what I'm planning to do. On the other hand, some of the things are still very similar to what we did with rings. With rings, we started defining a structure by certain axioms. We then defined substructures and nice substructures, which were called ideals. We defined homomorphisms. We were able to construct factor structures, factor rings, and basically all of these things we will encounter again when looking at groups, just then in the context of groups. We will have groups, we will have subgroups, we will have the particular nice subgroups are called, happen to be called normal subgroups. We have group homomorphisms, we have factor groups. And those of you who had linear algebra have seen in some way a lot of this spiel before. You've seen their vector spaces and subspaces. In the case of vector spaces, there isn't really something. This particular nice isn't a special distinction because all the subspaces are nice. You have vector space homomorphisms, which are called linear transformations. Typically, you didn't do factor structures. One could do it, but in linear algebra, they are not that prominent. So, the other thing which I hope you will see over the course of the next weeks is that what we have done for rings, or at least some of these steps, are in some way very generic. One can do something similar for these other structures. And indeed, if we wanted to define further structures, one could do again similar things, substructures, homomorphisms, and so on. And this will go the same way. Okay. So, since we had already rings and we have seen the axioms, I thought it is probably not too scary if I basically just start by writing down the axioms which define a group without going deep into a motivating example. Okay, so now this is the chapter on groups. Definition, the set. Now it's typically called G because group starts with the letter G. And I want this to be non-empty. With a binary operation I will call this binary operation star for the moment, and at some point this star will get smaller and smaller and will basically become a dot or vanish completely, and that's just laziness with writing. So in a ring we have a set, non-empty set with two binary operations. Here we have only one binary operation. Okay. Operation star is a group if the following three axioms hold. Okay. And now I'm basically copying the axioms which I had in a ring for addition. Just instead of addition, I take this operation star, which is the group operation. Okay. So the first property is associativity. So I have that A star B star C is equal to A star B star C. And if you look back at what we did with rings, this is, well, I don't know whether I called them A, B, C, then I might have called them X, Y, Z, but basically this is a verbatim copy of it with the only difference that instead of the plus, I draw right the star. Okay. The next thing, what was the next condition which we had in a ring for the addition? We had a zero element. Okay. So, well, zero, and this is, zero in some way is under multiplication something which brings things, maps everything to zero. So, typically, when we talk about groups, and in part because we consider this operation to be a little bit more like a multiplication, this neutral element we call an identity element. It's sometimes called a one, and you will see examples of this, why it makes sense to call this a one. But it is, what I'm doing is I'm basically writing down the condition for the identity element, again in the same way as in a ring. So there is an identity element. Okay, there exists an element this element is sometimes it's called it for identity, but in books typically it is called E. Why is it called E? Because identity in German is called Eins and is spelled with an E. And the first textbooks which described this theory were written in German. So that's why there is this letter E. But that's just tradition. There is nothing miraculous about this. Certainly this is not 2.178 something, or no, what is it? 2.718. Something. It just is one particular element and we tend to call it E. Okay. So there exists an element E in G such that for all elements A in G, I have that E times A is the same as A and is the same as A times E. Okay. The one thing which is extra, which I might not have bothered with the rings, is now I do the multiplication from both sides. And I'm doing this because I'm dropping the condition of commutativity. And I'm dropping this condition because we will see interesting examples which are not commutative. So, because I don't have commutativity, I really need to demand this from both sides, that it holds. And if you want examples where something happens, well, we had this a little bit with rings. We had examples in matrix rings, I think in a homework, where I said, take the product of these matrices. If you do it this way around, you get something non-zero. If you take it the other way around, you get something zero. So basically, from matrices, one could construct something where things would go wrong, where they might just work one way around and not automatically the other. So we really need to demand both things. Okay, that's the identity element. And the third condition is the inverse. So for all elements A and G, there exists an element B in G such that A times B is the identity element is equal to B times A. And again, because we don't demand commutativity, we need to write it down both ways. Okay. Well, sometimes actually groups happen to be commutative, and that then it gets a special name. If also commutativity holds, what does this commutativity mean? It would mean that A times B is equal to B times A for all A and B in G. Then G is called a commutative group. Or, and this is again for historical reasons, often these groups are called abelian groups. And commutative group and abelian group mean exactly the same, just two different words for the same meaning. Abelian is named in honor of Niels Henrik Abel, a Norwegian mathematician, who basically is one of the founders of group theory. You might have seen in the last few years in the news or so that Norway established a prize in mathematics called the Abel Prize, which is also named after the same person. Okay, so this is an extra condition, and that's the same as with rings. We had rings and we had commutative rings. Just with rings, there the operation was the multiplication. And with rings, we didn't necessarily have multiplicative inverses. Okay, so that's the axioms. Now let's start looking at some examples. I could take the integers and could take for my binary operation the ordinary addition. I claim that is a group. Well, addition is associative. We've seen this already. Addition has an identity element. In this case, the identity element would be just the number zero. And the inverse element, I should say, these inverse elements are typically called, we write that B is A inverse. So, in this case, A inverse is actually minus A, the additive inverse, because we take ordinary addition. Okay. So, this is just a symbol for multiplicative inverse in the same way as with fields. we talked about multiplicative inverses. Just consider this as a symbol. Don't write this as 1 over A. And the reason why I don't want you to do this is that you can get very easily confused if you consider group elements as fractions. With rings, typically they behave like integers or polynomials or so, and there these things still typically work out, or at least work out for the examples with which we were working. But with groups, if you talk about symmetries or so, 1 over a symmetry doesn't really make sense, and there are some situated places where it is very easy to go wrong if you use such a fraction notation. Yeah?
The E equals 0.
Yes.
That, you decided that after you decided your operation.
Yes. And why is it? Because I can just check if I take an integer operation with 0, which would be the integer plus 0 is the same integer. And if we had started with groups, I would have gone through more details here to show you, yes, all of this holds. But that's basically for the integers, this is nothing new. And it actually is a commutative group because addition is commutative, or an abelian group. Okay. There is nothing special about the integers here. I can do this with any ring. It's an arbitrary ring. I take as operation the addition in the ring. The identity element would be the 0 element in the ring. Then I get again an abelian group. Okay. So that's one of your ways to look at this. We just take things which also hold in a ring, and we just take part of the conditions. So rings always also are groups if I just look at them with the addition. But that's really not the kinds of groups we want to look at in general. They are not the most interesting ones as groups. Okay. Right. Now let's take some other example. Let's say we have R is a ring with 1. And let's say for G we take, and I think we wrote this before, as U of R. What is this? These are the units in R. And units were elements which had a multiplicative inverse. Okay. And I need to have a ring with 1, because if I don't have 1, it doesn't make sense to talk about multiplicative inverses. So I take a ring with 1 and I take the multiplicative inverses. Okay. And as operation now, I take the multiplication. Okay. I claim this gives us a group. Multiplication in a ring is associative. Certainly, that was one of the conditions for a ring. Identity element. Well, 1, if I have a ring with 1, 1 certainly is a unit, because 1 times 1 is 1. Right? So 1 is a unit. So the identity element here would be the 1 element of the ring. Okay. And that's why I said, that's basically the reason why it's called the identity, or often or sometimes called the 1 or so of the ring, because of this example, of the group. Because of this example, if we look at units of a ring. And what is A inverse now would be just the multiplicative inverse. And that's in some way the reason for this notation, A inverse. And if I take the units, they all have a multiplicative inverse. So this makes make sense. What I basically would have to show here, to show that this is a group, I would have to show first, it actually is a binary operation on the set. What does it mean? I need to show that the product of two units is a Guinea unit. So, note if A and B are units in the ring R, then I have that A times B inverse, A inverse is just the one element. So therefore, A times B is a unit in the ring. And similarly, A inverse is also a unit in the ring because A times A inverse is 1. So, units, the set of units actually is closed under multiplication, and is closed under taking inverses. Okay. If I take a ring and if I do this, I always also get a group. Okay, and this example now is the source for some more interesting cases of groups. So, for example, let's say we take as ring R the integers modulo 8. Then, what are the units of this ring? And I will often write this as U of 8. So here I mean, we write U of n to be the units of the integers modulo n. So what are the units, the multiplicative units modulo 8? Well, we have seen this before how to do. 1 is a unit, 3 is a unit, 5 is a unit. 7 is a unit, and that's basically because these are the numbers between 0 or between 1 and 8 which have GCD 1 with 8. Okay, so I have these four elements there, and they form a group. 1 would be the identity element, and now I can multiply. If I multiply two units, I showed the product is a Guinea unit. 3 times 5 is 15, modulo 8 is 7, so the product of these two is this. 5 times 7 is 35, modulo 8 is 3, and so forth. So this is an example of a group. Because the multiplication in this ring is commutative, the multiplication in this group is commutative. So this is again an abelian group. Right, before erasing things, are there so far questions? Good. So this is a case of an abelian group, but it's just abelian because the multiplication in this set happens to be, in this ring, happened to be commutative. I can do the same game in a ring which is not commutative. And that's my, will be my next example. Right. Let's say my ring R is the 2x2 matrices, let's say with rational entries. And I don't really need here, I just need some ring with commutative ring with 1 here. There's nothing special about the rationals. So I take this ring. Then what are the units of this ring? So there are certainly matrices. So there are matrices A in this ring. What does it mean that it is a unit, that the matrix is invertible? When is a matrix invertible? If the determinant is non-zero. So I take those matrices where the determinant of A is not equal to 0. Okay. These are the units of this matrix ring. And This is a very important example of a group, therefore this gets a special name. It is called GL2Q. And the 2 and the Q just come directly from the definition in the ring. The 2 goes here, the rational numbers go here, so we can define also a GL4 over the real numbers, or so in the same way they would be units in the 4x4 matrices over the real numbers. Okay, why is this group called GL? This stands for general linear group. General linear group in dimension 2 over the rationals. Okay, so that's as a special case of this, another example of a group. In this group, what is my operation? My operation is the multiplication in this ring. So my operation is matrix multiplication. Matrix multiplication. My identity element is the identity matrix. And the inverse is just the matrix inverse. Okay. And again, because of this argument, it is closed under this set is closed under this operation. It's clearly not empty because I have the identity matrix in there, and that gives us a group. And again, here we see that this inverse notation makes sense here. That's how you would normally also denote a matrix inverse. And yeah, again, this example basically is the reason, these examples are the reason why we typically the one operation in a group, even though it is somehow the one operation which in the ring becomes addition, in the sense of that we always have inverses, actually typically is considered to be a multiplication, because here it is matrix multiplication. Indeed, what one can show is that if you have a finite group, you can always write it as a group of matrices. One could always use this as examples. Okay, so this is another example of a group. And now this group is not abelian. Why is it not abelian? I'll just need to show you an example of two matrices in the group which do not commute. Let's say A is the matrix 0, 1, 1, 0. This has determinant minus 1, which is not 0. Let's say B is the matrix 1, 3, 0, 1, which has determinant 1, which also is not 0. Then one can easily verify that A times B is not the same as B times A. So this is an example of a non-abelian group. Okay. Yeah, and I said already here I can similarly define GL4Q. I just say I take 4x4 matrices, or GL17 over the complex numbers, or whatever I want. I can basically pick any ring here, any commutative ring with 1, so that I can talk about a determinant. And then I get this group. Okay. Right. So that's some examples of groups. But I said I also want groups to describe symmetries. And if I want them to describe symmetries, actually, I need to have a way to say what are my symmetries. Right? if I want to talk about elements of the grouper, so I need to say, what are the symmetries there? So, let's look at another example. Let's say I look at symmetries of a triangle. Okay, so I take my triangle here. I'll give the corners numbers 1, 2, 3, and I give them numbers so that we can actually see what the symmetry does. Right? Now, to describe the symmetries, basically, I need to draw them. I mean, we don't have another way. I can't hand you a motion of a physical object as something you can keep in your notes. So I can draw the result of the symmetry. But if I just draw the triangle before and after, you don't see what happened unless I put something on the corner so you see what actually happened with it. Right? Okay. So if I look at the symmetries of a triangle, what are the symmetries? So this triangle, I claim, under symmetries can go to 6 different images. Why 6 different images? Because if I know where 2 corners go, I know what happens with the whole triangle. And the first corner can go to any position. These are 3 possibilities. This next corner has to go to one of the remaining 2 positions. So I have 3 times 2, and then the third corner does what it can do. So I have 3 times 2. That's why I have 6 possibilities. Okay. So what I will do is I will write these symmetries now by drawing the image of the triangle under the symmetry. Okay. So, one symmetry is always easy, the identity, which maps everything to itself. Okay. What else can I do? I can rotate it, yeah? So I can say I take this triangle and I rotate it, what is it, 120 degrees. So what will happen with the triangle if I rotate it this way? This corner goes up here, so I have 1, 2, 3. And this symmetry I will call R for rotation. Okay. And that is basically now an ad hoc name for this example. There is no generic, well, in general, people probably, if they speak English or so, they might use R, might denote a notation by the letter R and not by the letter X or so, but that's really happens. Okay, but I can't just rotate by 120 degrees. I can also rotate by 240 degrees, respectively by 120 degrees counterclockwise. So what happens there with my triangle? There, 1 goes here, 2 goes there, 3 goes here. Okay. This rotation, I also have to give it a name. Well, R is already used, so I call it S. And what I claim is that S is actually the same as R star R, and I will write this as R squared. So I get this, if I do this operation twice, I get the same result as this operation, right? If I do a twice clockwise rotation of 120 degrees, I get either a clockwise rotation of 240 degrees, respectively a counterclockwise rotation of 120 degrees. And so if I do R and then I do R again, I have the same result as if I did this rotation S. So I could say this is, say, rotation here, 120 degrees, and this is rotation 120 degrees here. Okay, so that's 3 symmetries. I need 3 more. other suggestions. Sorry? Yeah. So I can take this axis here and I can flip it over. So I move 2 moves up here and 3 moves down here, right? Well, that would be a good name for this. Let's say I call this, for lack of better ideas, I call this A. And of course, I can do the same game with any other of the other 2 corners, right? So I can also do a flip at the corner 2. So this would be a flip about this axis. So I have 2 here, then 1 ends up here, and 3 ends up here. Let's call this B. And finally, I can do a flip along this axis, then 3 stays here, and 1 and 2 swap their role, and I'll call this C. Okay. So these are my 6 elements of the group. Okay. So now I actually want to show that this is a group. So what I need to do is, I need to show that if I do 2 operations, one after the other, that the product is again such an operation. So my product now is, the product is subsequent execution of the symmetry. Okay. So, and if I don't have a generic way to describe these things, basically I need to try everything out. And as in a generic way to describe such a group, I can't do basically anything but write down the multiplication table. So that's what I'm going to do now. I will write down the multiplication table. And in the case of a group, the multiplication table is often called the Cayley table. In honor of Arthur Cayley, who was a British mathematician, main work around 1890. If you had linear algebra, you might have encountered his name before. He also did quite a bit with linear algebra. So there is, for example, a Cayley-Hamilton theorem, which is named after the same person. Okay. Right. So now in my group, I have the identity, I have the rotation, I have the other rotation, and I have these 3 reflections, A, B, and C. Okay. And now I can just execute the products one after the other. So the identity clearly will, because it's the identity, will not change anything. Whether I multiply it the one way around or the other way around. Of course, since my operation is non-commutative, I actually need to specify which way around the operation is. So let's say I do first, this is first factor, and this here is the second factor across. So what happens if I multiply r times r? R times r, I just observed, this is r square. This is the same as s, right? If I take r and s, if I rotate 120 degrees to the right and then 120 degrees to the left, I'm back in the original situation, so that's the same as the identity. Okay, now it gets a bit more interesting. So, I want to rotate 120 degrees.
Are you always starting with B and then you're performing?
E is an operation. I'm always starting with a triangle And I take this triangle as it is, and I write the corners 1, 2, 3 on this triangle as it is. And then I'm doing the operations. And at the end, I'm looking at what is happening, how does the result look. And I look up in my table what, which of the results would it be. So if I take... Okay, so let's suppose I first do R, that's the 120 degree rotation, right? And now I do A. A is the reflection along this axis. But now, that's where we have to be careful. I say I do this operation on the triangle as it is. So the numbers which I have here are just there to help me tracking what is happening, right? So I now need to do a reflection on this axis, not the axis through 1. So I now do the reflection here, and I get 2 on the left here, 1 on the right here, 3 in the top. And that is C. So R times A is equal to C. Okay. R times B, if I rotate, B was this other reflection, then I have 2 in the top, 1 left and 3 right, that's the same as A. So R times B is A, and R times C, if I rotate 120 degrees and then I do the flip here, that gives me B. Okay, S times R with the same argument gives me the identity here. S times S, if I rotate twice counterclockwise 120 degrees, I get the same as if I rotate clockwise 120 degrees. So S times S is R. Right. S times A, I'm rotating counterclockwise. And now A is this reflection, so I have 1 in the top, 3 here, 2 there, so S times A is B. And if you now try out the other things, you'll see if we do S times B, so we rotate counterclockwise, and now B is this reflection, we have 3 on the top, 1 right and 2. So S times B is C. And S times C, if you try it out, will be A. Again, we had the same argument when we looked at the multiplication table of a field. Basically, in every row and in every column, every letter has to occur exactly once, because otherwise we don't have inverses. So that's why I knew that this has to be an A. Okay. A times R is first reflection here, so 2 goes to the top and 1 is here. This is A, and now R, the rotation, 120 degree rotation, gives me 1 on the top, 2 here, 3 here, so A times R is B. And now, you can observe that A times R is not the same as R times A. This matrix is not symmetric along the diagonal. So these are different. So we know this group is not abelian. Right? Because we've seen an example where the product doesn't go the same way. Okay. Right. So since I'm out of time here, I think I'll stop. If you want, fill this table out by yourself on Monday. I'll continue with basically just writing down the table in filled form. Right, thank you very much, and have a nice weekend. Thank you.